Dad Obsessed.
I think you go first this time.
Is it me this time? No, I don't think it is, because you did...
Oh, you did Submarine first.
Yes. That's right. Yes, oh, so I think you're first.
Mm. It's probably a good thing, to be honest.
Yeah. Maybe. We'll see how it goes. Laura's warned me that hers is a bit weird.
It's weird, to say the least, be honest. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm Ash.
I'm Laura. I'm the one with the weird story this week.
Yeah, and we don't have, like, anything to really catch up on, because we recorded yesterday.
Yeah.
That's about it.
I mean, no, we didn't. This is, like, recorded the day of.
I don't think anybody's stupid enough to believe that.
No, definitely not.
No. Okay. Weird me out. Let's go.
All right. So, the case I have for you today, like I said, is very weird. I started off my research thinking, what do I want to talk about on the podcast this week? And I thought, oh, I know, ectoplasm. Because of course you do.
Yeah, sure. That's a natural jump.
Because, like, I think I was on Facebook and I saw one of those pictures that was, like, you know, with the goo coming out. And I was like, oh, we should talk about ectoplasm. So I started researching and I came across the most notorious case of ectoplasm manifestation, which was with a woman called... This episode has French names, so I took high school French.
Mine has Italian.
Cool, we're European this
week. I took primary school Italian. I can sing the national anthem, but that's all I got.
I think we should do a rendition of that later.
Hell no.
Okay. I'm going to do my best, but...
We believe in you. You got this. Bless you in advance.
Thank you. The most notorious case of ectoplasm was a woman called Marthe Baraud. But boy, did this story take a weird turn. It was not the straightforward supernatural story I thought it would be.
Straightforward supernatural story. Okay.
Well, I mean, usually you sort of pick a topic and you research it and it's all like a...
Ghost in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's pretty... You know what you're getting in for, right? Like ghosts and spooky stuff. That didn't happen with this case.
Also, I love the Australian spin on the French name already. Great.
Yeah. Well, I hate it when people overpronounce international things.
I do it all the time.
Oh, dude.
Just because I can't help it.
Yeah. See, I filter myself because otherwise I think I sound funny. So it's just I would rather do a mix rather than being like very Australian and then trying to pronounce French things like French people do and probably failing. So I'm like, I'm just going to say it the way I would say it.
Fair. Say it like you spell it.
Pretty much. Well, okay, not quite that bad, but just not with the and the like.
Everything. I don't do the growling, but I can roll my R's pretty automatically, so I can do the...
Okay, that's
awesome. That was bad. I'm cutting that bit out.
No, you have to leave it in.
Mm-mm. You edit then.
I don't know how.
Exactly.
Okay, so yeah, you're going to get a clue about what happens because I'm going to put a disclaimer. This story contains some very strange sexual references.
Dope.
Yeah. It was very unexpected, to say the least, when I was researching, but if you're a youngin', this story isn't for you.
I feel like most of our stories aren't for you if you're a small child.
Yeah. This is just, I mean, I feel like kids can deal with, like certain kids can deal with spooks and ghosts and stuff like this, but
they shouldn't be listening to my half.
Yeah, they shouldn't. Particularly the friggin' fish episode, like. Let's just put that
the
out.
The fish episode.
That's how it's like stored in my brain. I'm like, the fish episode. I'm just like,
you're welcome.
Yeah. You did that to me. It kind of goes off topic. It goes to a very weird place, but it was just so weird and so bizarre. I had to share it on the podcast.
Fair.
So let's get into it.
Okay.
So Marthe Baraud was born in France in the year 1886 and from all reports lived a fairly normal childhood, i.e. no psychic abilities. So she was fine.
Sure, yeah.
At the age of 18, Marthe was engaged to a man named Maurice Noel, but her fiancé tragically died that year of a tropical disease in the Congo, because that's where he was stationed, and their wedding could never take place. It was really sad. After this tragedy, Marthe started to develop psychic abilities, which would lead to her becoming what's known as a materialization medium, which means that she can channel spirits and beings from the other world, but she causes them to manifest physically, which is pretty cool.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. If you believe that that's what happened. Oh, you're going to hate this one, by the way.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm just letting you know.
When do I not?
I'm waiting to come up with a case that you actually enjoy, but I don't think it's
I enjoy them all. I don't mind being infuriated. It's okay. Fine.
Well, just one where you sort of sit there and you go, that was a nice one. Yeah, I like that one.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. No, I don't. Because that doesn't even happen with my stories, but I wrote them, so that I've already processed that.
Good point. Okay.
This is what happens when you give me any sort of new information at all, ever.
Yeah, just, I hate it.
No, hate Mm-mm. it. Thanks, I hate it.
Yeah. Oh, you need that on a t-shirt so you can just point to it.
I might as well just get a tattoo at this point.
Oh, yes. But somewhere like maybe on your hands you can hold
it. No, I'm going to have hello and goodbye on my palms. Thank you very much.
I love that. Okay. Yeah. Back to the story. So her abilities were first discovered by the parents of her deceased fiancé because she was living with them at the time. And it just so happens that Madame Noël had been conducting sessions using a Ouija board herself.
Stupid.
Yep. She'd been communicating with a spirit named B.M. Boa. Yep, that's a name.
Bless you.
Now in the year 1905, 1 year after Maurice's death, Madame Noël invited Marthe to join her on a series of seances where Marthe was able to materialize the spirit of B.M. Boa, who turned out to be a 300-year-old Brahmin Hindu, which in Hinduism is a special priest or teacher whose job it is to guard the teachings and make sure they keep going throughout the generations. Yep, that's who they were talking to. Now, before you all call bullshit, because yes, I know how this sounds. I can see it in your face already.
I wasn't doing anything. I was just watching you struggle trying to read off your laptop at the same time.
I struggle to read anyway. So yeah, but I know this sounds insane, but the reason that this was even remotely plausible was because they took pictures, and you can actually see the pictures where this materialization is there.
Cool.
He was dressed in a cloak, he wore a helmet, and he had a giant beard.
Fuck yeah.
But the weird thing is that in the picture, he looks very similar to a 2D cutout. So if you want to look at it, it's extremely bizarre to look at.
Bad Photoshop.
Yeah, well, this is what? 1905.
Stone Age Photoshop.
They literally had a photo and they held it up. Yeah, it's really weird. I don't even know what to make of it, to be honest. But moving on. Despite seeing the photographs, a number of people, unsurprisingly, called hoax. And they claimed that the family must have had a man that was hiding in the house somewhere and he came out of a trap door, something like that.
Fair.
In fact, a chauffeur who used to work for the family, who was fired because he was stealing shit, he came forward and was like, I'm the one they hired to be Boa or whatever his name is, B.M. Boa. But a lot of people disproved this because this dude was huge. He was like big, tall
nothing
guy.
Nothing like the cardboard cutout.
Pretty much. Yeah. And they also searched the house and they found no trapdoors anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, however, they were like, well, I believe the chauffeur, so... I don't really know what to make of this part of the story,
right,
to be honest. What is interesting, though, is that after this debacle, Marthe changed her name to Eva Carrière, or Eva C, in order to distance herself from this whole thing and to continue practicing as a quote-unquote respectable materialization medium.
Sure.
Yeah, which is, you know, sounds credible. Now
I feel like if something happens and you change your name but continue doing the same thing, you don't get the respectable title anymore.
Yeah, that's why I put it in
like I feel like that should just, you did the thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a little bit of infamy now, why would you not use that anyway?
Well, it's because most people were like, she's a fraud.
I feel like most people would say that anyway if she's saying she's a medium. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Fuck the haters.
I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
So during these seances, Marthe was observed by a researcher named Charles Richet, who absolutely sweat.
What? Oh, that name just rings a few bells. It's all right.
He's a pretty big researcher in psychical sciences.
Yeah.
If that's a word.
I feel like there's a lot of stuff about like a London institute that he was working at. I think that's the right one. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think he was in London. He also published a bunch of books and stuff. So
yeah,
he was there. Now he swears that Mark was the real deal. He's like, I saw it. He observed a gooey substance.
Nice.
Emanating from her mouth, ears, nipples, and vagina.
What are you doing up in there? Get out of there.
Well, this is where the weird sex stuff starts coming in.
Okay.
He swears that he saw it all for himself, and the pictures he took are legitimate. Yep.
Get them nudes out of here.
Oh, we haven't even got to it yet.
Cool.
He claimed that the gooey substance would then organize itself into the shape of a hand or a face.
See that?
What?
One, flubber. And two, nanobots.
Yeah, just like...
Yeah, you know that, like... Oh, wow. You know that, magic sand? That's also... That's also, like, magnetized or some shit?
Yep, yep. That.
Everybody head to National Geographic shop for your
ectoplasm.
For your Christmas presents and make ectoplasm.
Yeah.
Don't put magic sand in your vagina.
Don't put it anywhere.
Or in your nipples. Just how do you get it to come out? I'm not. Never mind. Keep going.
Yeah, we're not done yet. So the gooey substance would organize itself into the shape of a hand or a face. It would then solidify into more of a paste-like substance, which was dry to the touch, which means he touched it, which is gross.
Oh, well, he's doing his due diligence as a science man. You gotta touch and lick all the things.
I have the worst mental images right now.
You're welcome.
So it was dry to the touch, and then after all that, it would either disappear completely, or it would retract back into Mart's body through all of the orifices I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been to Amsterdam?
I'm afraid to know where this is going, but no, I haven't.
Never mind.
No, you have to.
Well,
show.
They have those shows. They have a lot of like sex shows where essentially some of the shows are like women doing crazy shit with their orifices, as you put it so politely before.
Yeah.
Others are just shows of you go and watch people having sex live, which is weird.
Right. Okay.
But there are some women who have managed to be able to retract things themselves without using their hands. So, you're welcome. We've been recording for less than 15 minutes.
Yeah, I warned you, this was going to be a bad one.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just stuck on the retracting thing. I don't know how. I don't want to know how. Anyways, so then Charles Rocher, he coined the term ectoplasm. Because he discovered it, and he's like, this is what it is, and there we go.
That's cool.
Yeah. So moving forward to the year 1908, Marthe is now 22 and has moved to Paris, where she met an older couple named Alexander and Juliette Bisson. She moves in with the Bissons as the couple had a great interest in psychical research and had learned of Marthe's gift, and they were like, yeah, I want to study her. So she moved in with them. I don't know.
Sure, whatever.
I'm
not going to ask any questions.
No, we're just going to go with that. In 1912, Alexander died, and Juliet decided to move living quarters and took Mart with her. Wink, wink.
Oh.
And this is when the pair then enlist the help of researchers like Richet and another man named, he's a good name for you, ready? Baron Albert von Schrenknotzing.
I bet Notzing shrunk on him. Sorry.
Oh, but I'm
crying a little bit. Oh, that's a great name.
I wrote that down, and then I practiced it a bunch of times, and I was like, oh, she's going to really like this name.
I need to name something that in my house. What can I name? I need to buy a new plant.
No, you need to
that name. Plant. The Swiss cheese plant? The Monstera?
Yeah.
That's name is what? Baron?
Baron Albert von Schrenknotzing.
Yep. That's it.
I also would like you to name your first child that as well.
No, I already have them picked out. Sorry, friend.
Moving on. they enlist the help of these two researchers to develop a careful research program where they can prove that Mart's abilities are real.
Right.
They're like, we've got to do this right. We're going to do it. Strap yourself in, guys. It's about to get really weird. So this... So the sittings they would have with Marthe would be held both in Paris and in the personal laboratory of Schrenck-Notzing, which was located in Munich. For the study, they had devised a number of controls and procedures, we'll put that in quote marks, that they would perform to ensure that no tricks were being played and that anything they observed was genuine psychic phenomenon. Yeah, so they wanted to make sure that anything they observed was genuine psychic phenomenon. This included things like they would have her drink blueberry juice before the session so that if she was regurgitating anything to look like ectoplasm, it would be stained blue.
Cool.
And then at the end of the session, she would be given an emetic, which is a medication to make you throw up, to make sure the blueberry juice was still in her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bit gross, but like you can kind of be like, okay, makes sense.
Yeah.
They would also give her strip searches every time they did a session. They would also give her a full gynecological exam before the session. And then
every time?
Every time.
Gross.
And then Marthe insisted on having one afterwards as well.
Sure he did.
Yep. this was to make sure that there was nothing in there before the session.
No, like dye packs or something.
Yeah, just like...
That's where the banks put them, right? That's what they're for.
Oh my god, that's hilarious though. Could you imagine like
imagine waiting in line at the bank and they're like, well, if you come to deposit money and then the dye pack in your vagina just goes off.
It's just blue ink.
That's why jeans are blue. Sorry.
There you go. Oh my god, what is wrong with us? Where was I up to?
Gynecological exam.
Yeah. So
I almost just said dye pack. I was like, that doesn't
that probably
correlate
would have told
to
me
your words.
Where I was though. Mm. Yeah, so that was to make sure there was nothing in there. And for the session itself, she was dressed in a very form-fitting outfit, which I don't know exactly what that meant, but apparently it was tight.
So. Oh, yeah, so that way she couldn't hide things up her sleeves and
yeah,
down her boobs and stuff.
Nothing.
Cool.
The research was conducted over 4 years before they were interrupted by the outbreak of World War One.
Oh, damn, which, world wars getting in
so
the way
rude,
of
honestly.
Psychic testing for 4 years.
Exactly. I mean, they had more work to do. And during these sessions, they took over 200 photographs of ectoplasm being manifested and would later publish them in a series of books on the topic of psychical research.
Cool.
So there's a crap ton of them. Like, you can go look at them.
Dope.
Not all of them. And I'm about to tell you why.
Cool.
So,
is that me or you that's going off? I don't have friends. Of course it's you.
My phone's not going off.
Also, just quickly, you know how you said about he touched the thing?
He touched
the ectoplasm to know what it felt like.
Oh, yeah.
There's this meme on Tumblr that I've seen, and it's like, can you lick the science? An abbreviated list. And it's like, genetics, do not. Unless cheek swabs? Chemistry, no, do not. Archaeology, perhaps, but might be human bone.
Yep.
Geology, sometimes needed, sometimes dangerous.
Oh, yeah, they do lick it.
Psychology, best not.
You could get sued.
Physics, how? Zoology, in zoology, science licks you. And then it says anthropology, maybe ask first. Herpetology, bad plan, bad plan, bad plan. Sociology, yes, if you have time and dedication and a willingness to piss off a lot of people. Botany, you might hallucinate or die, or it might be delicious.
Yeah, it's kind of high risk, high reward with that one.
Yeah. Computer science, the tingle of electricity on your tongue is how you know it's working. Epidemiology, for the sake of the world, please do not. Linguistics, despite the name, please probably don't. Engineering, maybe, but it'll probably test like spreadsheets. Software engineering, nothing else has made the code work, so you might as well try it. Neuroscience, this is someone's brain, please, just don't. Marine biology, you can try, but you'll probably just drown. Astronomy, look, if your dedication to lick Uranus is what it takes to get humankind to another planet, then so be it. Anyway, sorry, I've cut all that out.
Oh no, because people need to hear that. So there's some things I haven't told you about the sessions yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Is it kinky sex stuff? Hey.
Let
me go.
How'd you guess? But this is because a lot of the websites that I read that were pro psychic abilities like to leave all this stuff out. And so it was basically everything that I've told you already, you
goddamn
know, science
biases.
You know, science experiments, and it's all legit. But because I'm very thorough in my research, I found a whole other perspective on this woman and the science and the seances, and it's not great.
Cool.
So here we go. Apparently, many people who knew Mart would describe her as neurotic and perverse, which may be an exaggeration, but after what you're about to hear, also might not be. It's said that those who attended the seances of Mart Baraud, that the sessions were extremely sexual in nature, and that her lover, Juliet, was an enthusiastic participant.
Oh no.
Yep. apparently, during the sessions, Mart would run around the room naked and perform, quote, sexual acts on the audience who had come to see her.
Okay.
It did not elaborate more than that, and I think that might be a good thing.
No, I want to know details, please.
Yeah, I tried to find them just for you. I couldn't find them. I have a few details, but cool. Not specifically what she would do to the audience.
Rude.
Yeah. You may be shocked to learn that most of the audience were men.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder if that was before or after word got around how a sale went.
Well, yeah, I was shocked to read that. You know, like, what? The ectoplasm would often be displayed in sexual shapes or locations, such as...
Sorry, what's a sexual shape? Are you about to elaborate? Mm-hmm. Good, because, excuse me.
So, some examples of each. An example of a sexual location would be suspended from her breasts. And a shape was, okay, this is a quote. The ectoplasm was depicted in a shape of a disembodied and deflated penis. Which I'm like, why? I mean, I could get if you made it lifelike.
Can I just, when you said sexual shapes and sexual locations, my brain went, yeah, sure, on the body. Makes sense.
Right.
Sexual shapes. I went, triangle? Cylinder.
What is so
triangle is a sexual shape.
I was about to say, what is so sexual about it? Oh, okay, I get it.
Well, I don't know. I said cylinder because I think that's more phallic, but that's the only thing I can really think of. But when I thought of sexual shape, my brain first went to triangle, so that is now the sexual shape.
See, my brain went hexagon, and I have no idea why. There's nothing sexual
about it. That's the most frustrating thing you've said to me all day.
That's the most frustrating
thing? That's the thing that's going to upset me.
Right, okay. I'll try and figure that one out as we go.
Yeah. Think about how you made that connection, please.
I don't know. I just figured it out.
Is it because it's the same shape as a 50-cent coin?
Sexual. I don't know. No, it's because hex sounds like sex. It's that simple.
Okay, I accept your promise.
Thank you. All right, we can be friends now.
we hated each other before this.
Just a little bit.
When we travel, we don't travel together. We travel separately.
Separate cars, separate planes.
All the time.
Okay. So yeah, disembodied and deflated penis. So I don't know why deflated. I don't know. It was also apparently the ladies would apparently work together to eroticize the seance experience and the ectoplasm itself. Let's not unpack that too much.
So ectoplasm is just ghost cum then?
Pretty much.
Okay.
We do talk about what it was that they were using in a second.
Okay.
Yep.
Not ghost cum.
It's not ghost cum, no.
Rude.
That would be interesting, though.
Hmm.
Because is it clear? Is it... I'm really into this. Okay, so...
Is that a gas? Sorry.
What if we're just breathing ghost cum all the time and we don't know?
Well, you know, that's what happens when you yawn, a ghost sticks its dick in your mouth.
That's why you always cover your mouth.
Always.
Like that.
This is a podcast, Laura. Just fake yawn, covered her mouth to show me what that looks like. Thanks.
I just had to demonstrate the protection, you know? Yep.
Shut up, keep going.
Okay. We're up to the bad part. Okay. So,
Wow, that's Crazy Frog. You're welcome.
Thanks. Okay, so it was also said that Juliet would insert a finger into Mart to prove that there was nothing in her vagina as well. Because the...
Except for a finger.
Well, yeah, except for a finger now. But apparently the exam in the start wasn't enough. So then during the show, so she would be like, look, guys, there's nothing in there. It's like, yeah, we know. But my hypothesis is that it was probably more than just a finger, and it was probably done a lot, given what this show is sounding like.
Just ghosting.
Yeah, so in support of all of this, because you kind of read it and you're like, what? But in support of all of these accounts and everything is that the alleged ectoplasm was found out to be nothing more than chewed up newspaper and magazine clippings that would be artfully arranged and made into the desired faces and shapes.
How'd she get it coming out of her nipples?
Well, basically she would make it and then she would like have strings and she would just appear and be like, oh my God, guys, ectoplasm.
Damn.
The way they found this out is actually really funny. Basically, in one of the pictures that they took of Marta with her, you know, ectoplasm, on one of the pictures, it had Lemiro, L-E-M-I-R-O, which was printed on it. And, Lemiro. Well, yeah, pretty much. It's the beginning of a magazine title, which was Lemiro.
Yeah.
Which, like M-I-R-O-I-R. So they left that on there. And they were like, oh. Well, I think we've just cracked this one open.
Guess you can't pick and choose when you're eating newspaper.
Yeah, pretty much. but also in the ectoplasm and the pictures, they were like, oh, there's all these faces in it. And, you know, you look at the pictures, it's just like paper mache with faces on it. It's really right. Weird to look at, okay. Which is probably why that guy's picture, back to the start of the story, the Hindu man looked like a 2D cutout because it probably was.
It was from a newspaper.
Yeah. Basically, what they did was they would cut out pictures of people from magazines and newspaper. They would chew them up. They would lay them out again. And then they would change the appearances just enough so that they wouldn't be instantly recognizable. So they would, like, add beards. They would change hairstyles. They would change face shapes. And then they'd be like, oh, my God, look, guys, ghosts.
Sounds like preschool arts and crafts.
Pretty much.
Okay.
They would then use wires and pins to sort of shape them all and make them look spooky. But then apparently these ladies were like, I know, sex show. And then that's what they did.
It's probably the only way they could get away with being together back then.
I mean, there is some sad stuff going on here because, you know, at first when I heard the descriptions of Marth that, you know, she was neurotic and perverse, like what if she was just, you know, sexually positive or something? And they were like, oh, you know, but there's some stuff in here that's not so typical.
I was really hoping that it was all going to be real, and then that would explain why there's not a lot of mediums nowadays because nobody's ready to get it on with a ghost.
Yeah, unfortunately.
You've got to be open to it to get to it.
I mean, have you seen those stories of people that claim they're fucking ghosts?
No.
Yeah. It's a thing.
Can you tell one of them next time?
Absolutely. I'll cool. Do. All right, guys, that's my next story. People who sleep with ghosts.
Sex ghosts.
Sex ghosts. Oh, there's the title. So over the years after, or during the years that Marta was doing her seances and everything, more people would study her and things like that. Obviously the main one was the, what was his name? The Baron and Charles. they were the main ones, but they were very pro Marta. So a lot of their stuff was like, guys, we've discovered it. It's amazing. Two more studies were performed, one in, what?
Just thought about a title for the episode. Okay. Le Baron von Ectoplasm. Sorted.
Beautiful. When you come up with the title halfway through the episode.
It does happen a lot of the time, but usually I can keep it to myself, but that was too funny.
Yeah, that was really funny. Yeah, so they did two more studies, one in London in 1920. They did 40 sessions. 20 of them, nothing happened. They did another one in 1922 in Paris. They did 15 sessions, 13 of them, nothing happened. Yeah.
Okay.
They believed that Marta was losing her psychic abilities, and by 36 years old, she had all but lost them completely. Which often does happen with psychic people. Like sometimes the older they get, they lose their connections and they fade away. But this was sort of like, oh, well, you know, we have independent studies now and, oh my God, nothing really happened. I don't know. But some really interesting stuff is that a lot of people would go see the seances and stuff like that. And two really famous people went. The first was Harry Houdini. He went to go see one because he wanted to see for himself. Now, anyone who knows about Harry Houdini knows that he's very anti-psychic ability.
Yeah, he used to like... Didn't he used to have like a group of people that would go around and they would bust up like and defraud mediums before he was due to do a show somewhere.
Yeah, because he
was mad.
He hated it. And actually, if you watch, just going to plug a channel that has nothing to do with this, but BuzzFeed Unsolved did an episode on it. And they actually think that might be one of the things that led to his death, because he was so outspoken about mediums and things like that and saying it's all bullshit. Which, funnily enough, he said that about Marta as well. He went to go see one of her seances and was like, yeah, she's a fraud.
That's mad.
Mm-hmm. But a supporter of Mart was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, who, for people who don't know, was the author of the Sherlock Holmes series. He went to go see one and was like, nope, I believe her. 100%, best thing I've ever seen.
Definitely has nothing to do with the female-on-female sexual stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, it's all psychic. That's it.
Mad. That's really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Because I don't know about you, but I have no concept of time, so I forget when people co-live.
I have no concept of time. You know, I figured out the other month, it was like 2-3 years ago now.
You really have no concept of time.
I have none whatsoever. My mum was alive at the same time as Picasso.
What? It
fucks you up, right?
I picture him from being like the 1600s.
Nope. A lot more recent than that.
Oh boy.
Time is an illusion.
Absolutely. Yeah, so the rest of Mart's life isn't really documented. Don't know where she went. Don't know what she did. They
just disappeared into the oblivion.
Pretty much. She lost her psychic abilities and all of the websites just stop. And then there's a rough figure that she died in the year of 1943, but that's really not substantiated. It was on Wikipedia and there was literally a citation request. So yeah, probably not that refutable. But there you have it. That's the origin story of ectoplasm, or as it's better known, chewed up paper stuck together. Of course, I haven't investigated.
Oh, what? Baron von Ghost Cup. Sorry.
You're just going to keep building on this title. And
That's great. I'm having a great time.
Fabulous. So, of course, I haven't investigated every claim of ectoplasm ever. But I think in the case of Marthe Barod, I think it's really fair to say that she was a fraud with really questionable motives.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's so cool.
Yeah. You see why, like, I was researching this ectoplasm thing and I was like, oh, let's find a cool story. And then this name kept coming up and I was like, all the pictures were coming up. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Oh my God. That's what I found. And I was like, well, that's bullshit. But
can't not do it now.
Yeah. I'm committed. I have to share this with the 10 people who listen to us.
The world. Share it with the world.
Share it to everybody. This is all I'm going to talk about.
And to the ether. Thought it was going to cough you in. Didn't. Right.
Proud.
My story is really long.
Okay. Mine wasn't that long, so bring it on.
Well, I mean, who cares if we go over? Sure. Because it's just nuts.
Okay. Really? So we're just really fucking with people's heads today.
Yeah, so this is the Axeman of New Orleans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Axeman of New Orleans is mostly considered to have his serial killings happen from 1918 to 1919. So we're about the same period.
Oh, yeah.
Which is interesting. But there are reports of incredibly similar crimes from 1910 to 1911.
Okay.
So there were reports of a strange figure that would enter the bedrooms of Italian grocers and attack them with an axe. The very first fatality in these earlier crimes was at the tail end of 1911. So there were attacks before, but this was the first one that they died.
Right.
So the first fatality was Joe Davey and his wife Mary were in their early 20s and owned and ran an Italian grocery shop. Mary was a few months pregnant when on the 26th of June 1911... Mary woke to see a shadowy figure standing over the couple's bed. She was asked for money and her hesitation caused her to be knocked unconscious after the figure struck her in the head, becoming impatient.
Oof.
Mary Davey awoke to her husband in their bed next to her with his skull opened, but he was still alive.
Whoa.
He later died in hospital the next day.
Oh, man, he was a trooper.
Yeah. Mary was able to give an okay description of the attacker. White, workman's outfit, he carried a butcher's cleaver and spoke with an average American accent.
Okay, so you're Joe Everyman, really.
Yeah. The attacks on Italian grocers and Mary's description had police thinking that these were hate crimes towards recent immigrants who were doing well in their businesses.
Makes sense.
They were hoping to get some more clues, thinking that the attacks were going to continue on, but they stopped. for 7 years.
That's really frustrating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good that no one died for 7 years, but like, that means he resurfaces.
Yeah. May 22nd, 1918, Joe Maggio and his wife Catherine were found in their bed covered in their own blood. Their throats had been cut while they slept and their heads had been brutalized with an axe from the family home. Oof. Catherine's throat was cut so severely, her head was almost separated from her shoulders.
That's not pretty.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. The killer had gained access to the house by chiseling away a panel from their wooden back door.
That would take a bit of time, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And you'd hear it?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Interesting.
It could be, yeah. Mm. I'm not entirely sure. I don't know how thick the doors were and all that kind of stuff, because the wooden doors you get now are like quite thick. They could have been a lot thinner then.
Yeah, true.
Just to save costs and that, because they're handmade or whatever.
Mm. Interesting. So,
but I mean, a chisel and a hammer in the right hands, you can make pretty quick work of some stuff. Yeah.
Nice. I'm just going to use sound effects for this. No, I'm kidding.
Please
keep
don't.
Going.
I'll cut them all out. The axe was left in the bathroom and the razor thrown over into the neighbor's garden.
Okay.
So the only other thing left at the crime scene was a chalk message on the pavement nearby. Mrs. Maggio will sit up tonight just like Mrs. Tony.
That's creepy.
There were some theories that this message was some sort of mafia warning, as Mrs. Tony could never actually be traced. Another theory was that it was Joseph Maggio's brother Andrew who discovered their bodies, and that he had a vendetta against his brother, used his brother's own axe and then a razor from the barbershop that Andrew worked at, but it was all totally circumstantial, so they never brought any charges to it.
Okay.
I need a drink.
Okay.
I realize I don't breathe when I talk.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't breathe in. I just breathe out when I'm talking. So at the end of a sentence, I'm super out of breath because I don't do both.
Ah,
I don't know why.
So I just talk really fast, and so I forget to breathe at all. I'm like, and then I'm like.
Yeah. Okay, so a month later, the axeman varied from his usual victim profile. On the 27th of June, the body of 60-year-old Polish immigrant Louis Besma opened the door to a delivery of bread covered in his own blood.
Oh.
He didn't seem to react to his injuries or the fact that his wife, Harriet Lowe, was also brutally attacked but alive in their bedroom. The back door had been chiseled out and the couple had been attacked by Besma's own axe. Now, there was a lot of shade on this incident because Lewis's injuries were significantly less than Harriet's. Police dug into the background a little more and found numerous letters in different languages, and in a delirious state, Harriet claimed he was a German spy.
I mean,
which was
doesn't?
A big deal at the time because this is when they were at war with Germany.
Yeah.
It got a little more weird when Louis Besma's wife turned up. Harriet Lowe was actually his mistress.
Oopsie daisy.
Yeah. Besma was actually arrested and charged but acquitted after 10 minutes.
Right.
Since all the evidence was mainly hearsay and mostly the evidence brought against him was like an eyewitness statement from the mistress who was suffering massive head trauma before she died. And at the same time, more people had been attacked in the same way.
Right.
Okay. So it was the mistress. Jesus. The mistress saying he did it. He's a German spy and like all this other stuff while she had a massive head wound, was on a lot of drugs, in surgeries, and then she died. So they were like, you can't really take that as your only evidence.
Yeah, you need at least something else.
Yeah, also, who thinks, I know a good way to kill somebody and make it look like I was also a victim, is hit myself in the head with an axe.
Yeah, there's got to be like at least three things you could do that's not that.
That's got to at least be like number four on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put down the page that I was still reading. August 5th. Mary Schneider, 28 years old, and nearly at the end of her third trimester of her pregnancy, waking up when she thought she heard her husband come home early from work that night, she was struck by a large, dark figure. Oof. The husband, Ed, did return home from work just a few hours later to find his pregnant wife with severe axe head wounds, and she was alive. He rushed her to the hospital, and then she gave birth to a healthy baby girl just a few days later, so she actually survived.
Okay. That's the second pregnant woman, though.
Yeah, also, I think she wasn't an Italian grocer, though. Their family wasn't Italian or grocers.
Oh, no, I just mean the pregnant thing.
Yeah.
It's a bit specific. Anyways, moving on.
Well, there's only the two, I believe. the so two far. Pregnancies. I think it's just more of a coincidence than anything else. Because, I mean, everybody's pregnant all the time then. They didn't really have contraception, so.
True. Oh, what an age to be alive.
You either were pregnant or you didn't know you were pregnant.
So the two options.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you got.
Good God.
So the weapon in the Schneider case was not an axe, but a lamp. The thing here is the door was chiseled in the same way. The chisel was left behind. The victim's own axe was used against them. But it's possible the killer used a lamp because they didn't have an axe.
Opportunistic murder weapons.
Yeah. So he always goes for the same thing, but I'm guessing he couldn't find what he was looking for and just went with whatever was closest.
He's like, well, I'm already here. Might as well.
I've already dug the hole in the door.
Yeah. Might as well grab a lamp.
Yeah. 5 days later, 15-year-old Paulie Bruno and her younger sister woke to see a figure standing in their doorway, almost hesitating before fleeing their home.
Okay.
So it's reported that maybe he was like, shit, do I silence them or do I just leave? And he chose to leave.
Okay.
The girl's uncle Joe Romano came into the hallway and even made it all the way outside while holding the massive axe wound in his head closed that went deep into his brain before he died.
Damn.
The back door chiseled out and the victim's own axe used and left in the house.
Okay.
This murder was the first acknowledgement that New Orleans had a serial killer.
Oh, it's taken this long for them to be like, guys, might be connected.
Yeah, there was like the whole bunch of attacks 7 years earlier with one fatality and now there's all this and they're like, yeah, it happened. After this quick succession of attacks, it would be months of silence from the Axeman. So March 10th, 1919, the Axeman of New Orleans returns, but not in New Orleans.
Oh.
Instead, just across the Mississippi, the Axeman hits, I think it's Gretna. Okay. I always want to say Granada, but I know that's not it. Mm. So I think it's Gretna. His first victim on his return was a 2-year-old girl, Mary Cortimiglia. Sorry.
What a last name.
I had to process that for a second. And her parents, Charles and Rosie, but the parents both survived.
Oh.
Unfortunately, New Orleans investigators were not allowed to help. Because it's across jurisdictions, some police officers have like little dick syndrome or whatever it is where they don't like to share.
That's such a problem in the US.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they ended up doing a really dodgy investigation. Fingerprints were contaminated, all sorts of other things. And it actually resulted in the neighbors of the victims being arrested. Gretna officers believed it was a typical Italian vendetta over rivalry grocery stores.
Racist.
Rival grocery stores. Yeah. See, I don't breathe until the end of it.
Breathing break.
So the two men arrested, 68-year-old Lorando and his 17-year-old son Frank. The evidence was so crap. For example, Lorando had severe arthritis and was going blind. So he would not have been able to pick up an axe, find it, pick it up and wield it. And secondly, neither of the men, especially the 6'2", 90 kilo son, would not have fit through the chiseled door panel.
Oh my God.
So, had essentially nothing.
Yeah.
But they wanted to get these guys so badly that as soon as Rosie was released from hospital, so Rosie's the mother, she was arrested, denied a lawyer, and left under no illusions that she would remain in jail until she remembered, in quotes, who attacked her.
Oh my God.
So they're trying to force a statement out of her so that it'll match these guys.
Yeah, which also she's going to be hella traumatized, That's how you handle someone.
After spending days saying that she could not be sure who attacked her, she finally relented and pointed to Frank and Leonardo as the suspects.
Mm-hmm.
Gretna police produced a detailed account of the attack and forced Rosie to sign it.
Oh, God.
So it's not even her own words. Knowing that she could not read English and had no way of knowing what she was signing.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, you hear about bungled cases, but this is just next level.
Yeah. The statement was enough to convince a jury, and Frank was sentenced to hang. Lorlando was given life imprisonment. Thankfully, they were both released in 1920 after Rosie recanted her statement to different officers.
Okay. All right. They're out of jail. We're okay.
Yeah. Not long after the published ordeal of arresting the father and son duo, the Axeman of New Orleans is alleged to have written a letter to the newspaper.
Oh, here we go.
It's a big letter.
Okay.
It's insane. And I'm going to read the entire thing.
All right. I'm ready.
Settle in.
I'm ready.
So it starts being addressed, hot as hell, March 13, 1919. Esteemed mortal of New Orleans, the Axeman.
I'm so excited already.
They have never caught me, and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible. Even as the ether that surrounds your earth, I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orleanians and your foolish police call the Axeman.
I love this guy.
It's so good! When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with the blood and brains of he who I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit.
Oh, that bit makes
me laugh. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but his satanic majesty, Francis Joseph, etc. But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover what I am, for it were better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axeman. I do not think there is any need of such a warning, for I feel sure the police will always dodge me as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as the most horrible murderer, which I am. But I could be much worse if I wanted to.
Oof.
If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night at will and could slay thousands of your best citizens and the worst, that's in brackets.
Huh?
For I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death.
Oh, cool.
Now, to be exact, at 12:15... earthly time, in brackets. On next Tuesday night, I am going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I am going to make a little proposition to you people. Mm. Here it is. I am very fond of jazz music. And I swear by all the devils in their nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well, then so much the better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is that some of your people who do not jazz it out on that specific Tuesday night, if there be any, in brackets, will get the axe.
Oof.
Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping that thou wilt publish this, that it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that ever existed in either fact or realm of fancy. The Axeman.
I just keep picturing this dude and the Angel of Death hanging out and listening to jazz music.
I imagine he's sitting in hell.
Right.
He's got one of those big, beautiful oak desks.
Yeah.
Like the big leather chair.
Mm-hmm.
But everything's around him on fire. And he's got a quill.
Yeah.
That's like mostly bones.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just writing and he's just bopping along to his jazz music at the same time.
I mean, like, oh my God, if you looked up Delusions of Grandeur in the dictionary, you would just find that letter.
Isn't it brilliant?
It's so good.
I love it so much.
I kind of want it printed out and framed somewhere.
I was just thinking that. We'll make them. We'll do calligraphy class and do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Could you imagine that? Like, we go to like a calligraphy class and they're like, oh, are you doing like wedding invitation or something? You're like, oh.
You've got to write a letter from a serial killer. So now, if you believe he did actually write this letter or not, so some people think that it was like a music store or a crazy person or something like that to get jazz going.
Okay.
There was actually no attacks on that night because goddamn did they play jazz all night up and down that city.
I'm not taking any risks. I would play it in my house.
Yeah, definitely.
Jesus.
So it would be August of 1919, so 5 months later,
mm-hmm.
when the Axeman attacked a grocer named Steve Boker.
Okay.
The attack had all of the trademarks of the Axeman. Steve survived but could not remember a single thing about it.
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
Okay.
3rd of September, 19-year-old Sarah Lauman was attacked in her home where she lived alone. An axe was left on her front lawn, but it's thought it was a copycat as there's no entry through a door but through an open window. She was not Italian nor a grocer.
Okay.
So that could just be a bit of a cover-up there. The last attack attributed to the Axeman was the 27th of October, 1919. Mike Pepione, a 35-year-old Italian grocer, was discovered by his daughter dead from axe wounds to the head. There was some that thought since the investigators found Pepione was involved in the killing of another Italian migrant earlier, this might genuinely be a vendetta killing.
Okay.
Because they did have them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of 1920, authorities were satisfied the Axeman was done.
Mm-hmm.
So criminologists agree that the viciousness of the Axeman makes it very unlikely that he would just stop. And stopping more than once is just unheard of, really.
Yeah.
So it's thought that he was either dead by this stage or he had been imprisoned for an unrelated offense.
Yeah.
My thought
mm-hmm.
is that maybe he was triggered by like an unsuccessful period in his life. Mm. Hence his target. So he's going for people that are sort of new to the area but are doing quite well.
Yeah.
And they're all grocers, essentially. Mm. And then when he is having success in his endeavors, he doesn't have the urge to kill. And towards the end, he either did die or was injured or simply retired in old age and didn't have the trigger in him anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the thing that I just keep thinking about is the major theme of that letter is that he likes feeling in control. Like, particularly the part where he's like, I could attack every night if I wanted to, or I could be worse if I wanted to, but I like having you under my power so that you don't know when I'm coming.
Yeah.
So that kind of explains the episodic nature of it for me, where he's sort of like, I'm going to do it here, I'm going to do it there. But I think you're right that there is some sort of motivation to it, whether it is linked to his life and how it's going, or perhaps he had, maybe his wife cheated with an Italian grocer or something, or there's some sort of personal motive going on there, because I doubt he's, you know, the devil or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But the letter is a lot, but the letter is easily like my favorite bit. And I really hope that it genuinely was him that wrote it. But like the last few attacks, they could be anything, really. You know, like maybe his illusion was fulfilled because he had the whole city do the one thing that he asked them to do.
Mm.
So he's like, all right, I'm done now.
I mean, he probably would have been like beside himself that night, just hearing the whole city play music because they're all in terror of him. Like,
yeah.
His brain may have exploded from too much self-esteem.
I was going to say jazz music. But yeah.
Well, okay, that too.
Yeah, but that letter is just insane.
It's just so totally good. Insane.
And I can't get over the fact of like, he came completely unprepared.
Mm.
Every time, like, he never brought a weapon with him or anything.
Yeah, he was like, oh, they'll have one there.
Yeah.
And then when they didn't, they were like, oh, I'll just grab a lamp.
Yeah, I'll just grab something else that can be used as a weapon. I'm curious to know as well how long it would take to chisel out a door panel.
Should we test it? Who has a door we can chisel?
I'm sure we can get one somewhere.
Yes.
I do have a chisel. Halfway there.
Is it for chiseling doors open?
Can be.
Oh, wow.
It's for woodwork, so yeah.
Okay, all right.
We just have to go get a door. We can do this.
We can do this.
Surely this is on Mythbusters. Probably not.
Probably not. I think it's a bit niche for them, but we'll do it.
Yeah.
No, but we need to have a door that's in a frame, though, and lockable.
Why?
Well, because don't you have to chisel it open? Like, isn't it like a locked door and you chisel it open?
No, you just chisel it. They're basically, he cut a hole in the bottom corner of the door and crawled through it.
I thought he was like chiseling the door open, like attacking the lock or something.
No. He's chiseling a hole through one of the panels in the door.
He must be pretty strong then.
No, that's why chisels are there.
I know, but even to like, this is what we were talking about earlier about the strength of the door, but to sit there. See, this is also making me think, wouldn't you have heard him? Like, if he's trying to get through your door, I mean, it's going to make at least a little bit of noise.
Hmm. I guess. Unless it was already, like, pre-chiseled and nobody noticed.
Yeah. Oh, maybe he went the night before and just, like, and then the night off, he just goes and goes, and then he comes through.
Yeah, chisels it most of the way out or something. Mm. I don't know. There's not a lot of, like, I tried to find more. I could just find the same sort of things over and over again. And it was really hard to find like more about like the previous attacks even.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a big deal then, which is ridiculous. But then also more details about that kind of stuff. It was hard to see, but I couldn't let it go.
Yeah, no.
I love it.
It's actually, I do this a lot. I pick one detail and I just get stuck on it. I'm like, but what about this part?
Yeah, yeah. So, but that letter is just...
I love it so much.
Miles of insanity. And it's so great. I just love that it's even like... It's postmarked from the hottest hell. Like, it's just...
He really went hard with it. Like, he's not alluding to anything. He's like, no, I'm in hell. My buddy is the angel of death. I like jazz music. You all have to play it. He's just...
Yeah.
He's not beating around the bush.
Yeah. Anyway, that was the Axeman of New Orleans.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
What an episode.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. I've been Ash.
I've been Laura. Also, don't forget we have socials.
Yes.
I'm really trying to get people to join. Actually, I pinned a post today.
Well done.
Yeah. Well, I kind of. I made it an announcement because I couldn't find a thing that said pin it. But it's up the top anyway. From now on, if anyone has a case that they're hoping we'll cover, drop a comment on the Facebook group. You just have to request to join first or DM us on Instagram.
Yep.
We're taking suggestions.
Or tweet at me. That works too. Yep.
I don't have Twitter, so tweet Ash.
Yeah.
But yeah, if there's something you're like, oh, I hope... Actually, I have our first one.
Ooh, exciting.
My friend Nick has made a request because he's been listening to us.
I have our first listener story as well. Yes. So big things happening. Oh, big things happening. He's going to record it himself and then I'm going to drop the file in. So he'll actually get to tell it to you guys as well. So,
that's
all I'm saying.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Yes. But yeah, go follow the socials. Dead Obsessed, is it Dead Obsessed Podcast on Facebook or just Dead Obsessed?
I double checked. It's Dead Obsessed Podcast. So it's the same as the Instagram.
Yeah. So Dead Obsessed Podcast. Fuck me. Dead Obsessed Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. My Twitter is just Catastrophe IRL. You'll see it. It'll be there somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, come follow us on the internet and talk to us and stuff.
Because we want to talk to you.
And leave a review on Podchaser or iTunes or Google. I don't know how Google Podcasts work, but I'm sure it does.
If you can leave a review, you should do that.
Yes. If you can figure out how, have a go.
If we could leave a review for you as a person, we would do it too, but we can't.
That's a slippery slope.
Oh, okay.
Have you watched Black Mirror?
Oh, yeah. Okay, no, I was thinking more like, you know, like warm fuzzies, if we could just like send them out to people. You can only say nice things, but like if we could do that, I would.
I don't think you can. Anyway, we'll talk about Black Mirror later. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Fucking hell, I'll never know how to end this.